have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both with the State. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
All right. We are continuing this week on the Eat the State election endorsements. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. We talked last week about most of the initiatives in all of the federal offices. And those picks and the ones that we will mention today are available both in the free print copies of Eat the State floating around in town and also online at www.eatthestate.org, all one word. Today we're going to talk about state offices and then a handful of other things, sheriff, judges, Seattle Prop 1, but mostly the state offices. And we'll start out with a big one, which is governor. I have a pretty enthusiastic endorsement, actually probably one of the two really, really enthusiastic endorsements. We'll get to the other one later in this segment also in this election for governor. Some progressives don't care that much for Jay Inslee. I do. I think he's been very, very effective in Congress as opposed to, say, Jim McDermott, who is sort of more out in his sleeve about progressive values, but doesn't get a lot done in D.C. by comparison. And in terms of governor, he's by far the most progressive Democrat that's had the nomination since Mike Lowry 20 years ago and has a track record of being more effective than Lowry, both in Congress and previously in his career. Rob McKenna, on the other hand, is a disaster. He is basically Scott Walker with a nice smile, who will say one thing to his base and another thing to more general audiences. And I really don't trust him at all not to enact the kind of things he's saying to his base. So very strong urging to get out the vote for Jay Inslee, one, two, several times, as many as you can. Lieutenant governor, on the other hand, that is really an office that should be abolished, and there's no better example of why it should be abolished than the incumbent, Brad Owens, who's been there basically since dinosaurs roamed the earth. Since the lieutenant governor doesn't actually do anything except step in if there's a tie in the state senate or if the governor gets hit by a bus, Owen has been using his time and a lot of taxpayer money to cheerlead for the war on drugs over the last number of years and to take a lot of special interest money for doing nothing. On the other hand, his Republican opponent is not real good either. So I would tend to write in just abolish this office because there's no Libertarian, there's no Green running this year. It's just the two of them, neither of whom I'd want to see in there. Feel free to chip in if you disagree with any of this, Maria.
No. I mean, I came to the lieutenant governor's race and I'm like, should I flip a coin? Should I just ignore it? It's up to you. You can do what you like.
Yeah, but as long as you don't vote for them.
Because really neither deserves your vote.
Yeah. Secretary of State is the opposite situation. For the last number of years, in fact, the last 32 years, there's been moderate Republicans. First Ralph Monroe and then Sam Reed occupying the office. And while Reed has not been perfect, especially around electronic voting machines, he has done a really good job of expanding people's ability to vote both through mail-in balloting, most recently through Facebook registration, a lot of other fairly progressive things.
He's taken the office seriously and done a decent job.
Yeah, as opposed to many in his party who have really pressured him to engage in the same sort of voter suppression techniques that have happened
in other states.
The Republican that's running this year is also from Thurston County, as Reed was, and also has the same kind of reputation, but again is going to be subject to that same kind of pressure from other people in his party, and you don't know if he's going to do what Reed did and hold up to that pressure. Kathleen Drew, the Democrat running, is also well-qualified, also looks solid, and would not be subjected to that kind of pressure, so I'm leaning toward Kathleen Drew in that race. State treasurer is an unopposed incumbent, so we skip those because this is not North Korea, much as some people would like it to be. State auditor is one of those offices that used to be apolitical but has now been politicized thanks to Tim Iman because the performance audit initiative that Iman passed is in principle a good idea, but it can also be used by the state auditor to pursue ideological agendas. And that makes it probably more important than it used to be to make sure that the person who is elected to that office is not going to use it for political purposes, but in fact is going to do the kind of nonpartisan things that a state auditor should be doing. So Troy Kelly, who is the Democrat running in in this race is the better choice there. And then there's been a very hotly contested race for attorney general now that Rob McKenna is abandoning that for his dreams of higher office. Bob Ferguson, the King County council member, who's the Democrat, and Regan Dunn, the King County council member, who is the Republican. And again, Regan Dunn is one of these Tea Partiers who very much has his eye on higher office, much as Rob McKenna did 8 years ago. And Bob Ferguson is a fairly independent-minded Democrat who is progressive on some things, fairly centrist on others, but he would be vastly better than Regan Dunn. And as we have seen with McKenna, McKenna has been okay on some things as Attorney General, and others he's been very nakedly partisan and has done a whole lot of damage in that respect. His lawsuit against Obamacare being the notorious example of
so
that.
So it's an important office. Yeah.
So it's an important office. It's also important because, and we've seen this in McKenna's term, Attorney Generals can be more or less aggressive about defending state programs or state departments that they don't agree with or where the person leading them is from the other party. And McKenna's been bad with that, and I would expect Dunn would be too.
Yeah. So. And, you know, there's been a lot of money poured into this race, particularly from the Republican side, and there's been a lot of mudslinging back and forth between the two candidates. I want to point out, though, you know, that Regan Dunn, his side started that whole negative campaigning thing. So, you know, if you're disturbed as I am by the negative and misleading ads that the Ferguson campaign is now running, it's payback. It's pretty much what they have to do in order to try to keep competitive in this really what I think of as an example of the worst kind of politicking and campaigning you can do.
And hey, for all those people who complains that Democrats never fight back, well,
here he is. He's fighting back.
Yeah. Commissioner of Public Lands, once again, is a battle between the incumbent Democrat in this case, Peter Goldmark, who's been fairly good on the issues, although we've heard some behind-the-scenes things about, you know, how he treats staffers and things like that that have been dubious. But his opponent, Clint Didier, you previously knew of him when he ran the Republican primary against Dino Rossi for this U.S. Senate 2 years ago as the Tea Party favorite. And he basically would be of the gut all environmental laws and clear-cut everything school. So you definitely want to support Peter Goldmark there. An insurance commissioner, same sort of thing. Mike Kreidler, the Democratic incumbent, takes the idea of regulating health insurance companies seriously. Their opponents think that the only thing that's really wrong with our health care system is the poor, oppressive boot of tyranny that's being put on health insurance companies. So Mike Kreidler, very much in that.
Definitely support Kreidler.
Yeah. There's a number of state Senate districts, or state Senate and state House districts that are interesting. The two in particular that I want to highlight here, because we have limited time, is District 11. Bob Hasegawa is looking to move from the House into the Senate, and he is flat out one of the best people in Olympia. He's good on progressive issues. He's good with unions. He's very much worthy of support. And then District 43, Frank Chopp is getting a challenge this year from Socialist Alternative candidate Kashama Sawant. And this has been a fascinating story because Sawant originally ran against Jamie Peterson in the primary. You'll note that the 43rd district, which is basically, you know, Wallingford, U District, Capitol Hill, one of the most liberal districts in the state, has two state representatives that are among the most conservative Democrats in Olympia. And so the stranger was sufficiently impressed with Sawant because she's very articulate, very bright, very knowledgeable, that they encouraged people to write her in against Chopp as well. Well, it turns out that she finished second both against Peterson and against Chopp, so she got to choose a race. She chose to run against Chopp, and she's continued to be an outstanding candidate, and that is our other really enthusiastic endorsement.
And I'm glad she chose what I consider to be the right candidate for her to run against.
Yeah, absolutely. and highlighting the fact that, you know, while Chopp comes out of a social service and public service background, how he has actually operated in Olympia, you know, things like his being very cozy with the BIAW, his blocking of progressive legislation on a number of issues. It really needs to highlight, number one, that Chopp has been doing his constituents, both in the 43rd district and statewide, a disservice. And also, Sawant, I really hope, although she's not likely to win this year, I really hope she considers office and maybe local office next year with city council or another office, and that a broader spectrum of progressives and liberals in Seattle can get behind her, because she's a real talent. Right. So state legislators worth supporting, I'll just run some off, Zach Hutchins and Steve Berquist in the 11th, Reuven Carlisle in the 36th, Maureen Judge and Marcy Maxwell in the 41st, Jerry Pollitt and Sarah Jean Siegfried in the 46th. And butchering names in the morning. King County Sheriff. This is a hard one because both of them are, both of the people running are pretty much insiders. We have Steve Strachan, who's been the, who is the right-hand person of the outgoing, Sheriff Sue Rahr, and stepped in, I believe, as interim when she retired, and John Urquhart, who was the public affairs spokesperson for the King County Sheriff's Office for many years and has moved into management. I have a slight lean for Urquhart here because he's shown a willingness to acknowledge some of the problems of KCSO and to bring in people from outside the department. I think they're both flawed, but given that the department is in many ways just as troubled and just as problematic as SPD and has been just as unwilling to acknowledge it, I'd prefer somebody who is not coming from the inside ranks at all, but
that's not possible.
Possible. So I have a lean toward Urquhart in that one. A couple of judicial races to talk about. State Supreme Court. There was one position that did not get a majority in the primary, and that's back on the ballot again. That's position 9, where Cheryl McLeod is the incumbent and is well worth renominating. And then the other tricky one was Superior Court Justice Judge Position 42, in which there were a lot of not good choices in the primary. And two particularly not good ones made it to the final, Christopher Washington and Sue Parisian. Parisian is a former aide to Rob McKenna in the Attorney General's office, and everything we have heard about her from a number of sources is that she is A, not qualified, B, campaigning deceptively, and C, highly ideological, all of which spell serious trouble. Washington, the big knock against Washington was a King County Bar Association survey in which out of the 50 Superior Court judges, he finished 50th of 50 in all of their categories. But if you look at that more closely, it looks like it was a very small survey. Only about something like 44 out of the 10,000 or so lawyers in King County responded to that survey. And half of them were from the prosecutor's office, and it was a very specific vendetta over some juvenile court run-in. So Washington, comes with the usual sort of recommendations that come with incumbent judges. Parisian, clearly unqualified. I'm inclined to go with a known quantity in Washington.
All right.
And then we have one other housekeeping measure, which is Seattle Proposition Number 1 that we didn't get to last week, and our recommendation was yes on that as well. Mm-hmm. And then, again, if you missed any of those or if you'd like something actually printed or printable from online to look at that all with, again, www.eatthestate.org, or if you see Eat the State where you get free publications. And the caveats, as usual, do your own research, make up your own mind, and don't stop with voting. Get out there and change things so that we have better options to begin with.
And I always find that the comments, especially on the endorsement articles, interesting. Mm-hmm. Find things I didn't know previously.
So. Yeah, and you get people on there making cases for their favorite candidates, mm-hmm. Especially if we snub them.
Yes,
which is good. We love that. So by all means, check it out.
All right, moving on to local, starting with SPD related news.
Yeah,
this
week the city council voted 8-1 to propose Merrick Bob as the person to oversee the Seattle Police Department, Department of Justice agreement.
And remind us, was that McGinn's choice?
No, Mayor McGinn last week had said that he wanted to disqualify Merrick Bob because he thought there was a conflict of interest there. He was taking his cue from the police department and the police union, who didn't like Merrick Bob because apparently someone who had served on the board of directors of the nonprofit that Merrick Bob runs had done some work on the Department of Justice, on helping to write the Department of Justice report, and so they thought there was a conflict of interest. I think the real reason they didn't want him in there is because Bob has a very, very good reputation and over 20 years of experience overseeing law enforcement departments law enforcement agencies.
In other words, he might actually do the job that the job is designed to do.
Yeah. He has a very good resume, and he has a very good word of mouth about him. He's also been a leader in the field of consultants that work in doing law enforcement oversight issues. So
do you happen to know who the one city council person who opposed that was?
It was Mike O'Brien. And O'Brien didn't oppose him for any particular reasons other than that he hadn't interviewed him and hadn't been part of the process.
And he's also McGinn's closest ally on council. Just saying.
Well, in some respects he is, in other respects he's not. But he said, well, I'm neutral. I can't really make a vote in this, so I'll stand back. It was an 8-1 vote, so you can't really complain too much. Now, the city council is directing the city attorney, Pete Holmes, to file a motion jointly with the Department of Justice to ask the U.S. District Court Judge James Robart to appoint Bob as overseer of the agreement and of the SPD. And Court Judge Robart will now look at Bob's resume and will probably also interview him just to make sure that he is truly qualified for the job. I don't think he will have any objections to him, though.
All right. Also this week, there was a hearing regarding...
There was a public meeting this week. The SPD was trotting out its new draft policy on aerial drones, and they wanted to bring out the aerial drones and show them to the public in kind of a wow, gee whiz, look at our new toy kind of thing.
So if you're going to have a wedding party, take it out of Seattle, is that what you're saying?
Well, if you're the SPD, you might want to be a little bit careful about what new toys you present to the public here in the city of Seattle, where we now have a long history of SPD crackdowns on what is considered under the Constitution legal exercises of free speech and civil disobedience. Now, the public meeting was pretty contentious. People were shouting at the SPD and saying, you know, you guys want to use these for aerial surveillance of demonstrators, etc. And I really want to point out that that's not a paranoid idea, okay, like the Seattle Times like to present it in their media coverage of the meeting. Now, the SPD says that the aerial drones will be used for emergencies, but then they go on to say that they will use them in their draft policy. They go on with this vague wording saying that they want to use them in other undefined situations. And now the specific situations in which they say they want to use these aerial drones are pretty questionable to me, too. They say they'll use them for homicide. And I looked at that. I'm thinking, how are you going to use an aerial drone when you're investigating a murder? Okay, I don't get that.
The body might move.
Yeah, really. Homicide, traffic situations. Again, I'm like, okay, well, where would you use an aerial drone where you couldn't use a traffic helicopter, you know?
Or a camera.
Yeah, or just a camera. And then a traffic camera, because there are lots and lots of traffic cameras around. Hazardous materials. Again, I'm like, okay, I'm not sure, you know, what that means. Search and rescue. Again, I was scratching my head going, okay, we do a lot of search and rescue in downtown Seattle or on Capitol Hill.
The rugged wilderness of West
the
Seattle.
The rugged wilderness of the urban environment, yeah. They say they want to use it for barricaded persons situations. Again, I'm like, okay, well, you know, usually in a barricaded persons situation, you have the SWAT team show up. They have all their cool little toys that
and
they
the barricaded
use.
People, aren't by definition, aren't they inside?
Yeah, they're usually
like under
inside.
A roof.
Well, these aerial drones have infrared cameras. And one of the first, when they were first purchased, the SPD highlighted two instances in which they would like to use the cameras. One was search and rescue. And when people said search and rescue in an urban environment, they said, well, you know, they have infrared cameras, so we can use them to search out sources, unwarranted sources of heat inside buildings. And then they used the example.
Isn't that a Fourth Amendment issue of search and seizure?
Well, they use the example of maybe spotting indoor marijuana grow operations, which means they were thinking of using them for the war on drugs, which again has its own set of very controversial elements to it, particularly when we're voting on an initiative that may legalize marijuana.
And didn't
the
city
of
Seattle say that's a low priority?
Yeah, and the city of Seattle has made that the lowest enforcement priority for the SPD. So again, it brings it down to what are these drones really for? Well, you have to look at what they were developed for by the military. They were developed specifically for wide-ranging surveillance and for launching weapons. essentially, in places where the U.S., where U.S. military personnel couldn't go. Well, they're not going to, the SPD, you will hope, are not going to be using them for the second instance, but they can certainly use them for the first, which is wide-ranging surveillance. And again, that brings up privacy issues. And of course, when you're engaged in protest activities, you're pretty unhappy if you think the powers that be are using wide-ranging surveillance on you at all times, or when you're in the middle of a demonstration. So yeah, you
or
can
when
see
you're
why
planning
these people
the
are
demonstration.
Concerned. You can see why people are concerned. And why these very expensive toys might not be a good thing for the SPD to be spending its money on. Now, they have another toy that they've been discussing purchasing, and that is the gunshot locating cameras that McGinn put money in the city budget for. Again, not just issues of privacy involved in those, but you have to also look at what those gunshot locating cameras were designed for. They weren't designed to be planted in an urban environment to figure out, okay, where was a gunshot fired from, when you know that the shooter probably got in a car or was in a car and has long since left the scene. They were developed for the military to use in trying to locate the enemy so that they could target artillery or an aerial drone for a counterattack. So you look at that and you go, okay, these gunshot locating cameras, really, there's no study that proves that they're useful in an urban environment for the kinds of things the SPD say that they want to use them for. They're really just a waste of money, and that money could be much better spent in implementing the DOJ agreement.
All right. Moving on, McKenna, developments with his campaign.
Yeah, McKenna, by the way, don't feel very comfortable about Inslee leading or winning next week. McKenna has taken a lead in the latest Elway poll, 47% to 45%. Now, Inslee has been marginally ahead in almost all the polling since the primary, and that whole poll is still within the margin of error and may be an outlier and may not be an outlier, so by all means, pay attention. But one of the reasons why McKenna is a bad idea came up today in the web page on his campaign site of why women should support Rob McKenna. And this is a direct quote. Women don't want free stuff, nor do they want their children being taught alternative lifestyles by strangers, which, manages to be code word for two conservative bogey people at once, the alternative lifestyles being a fairly thin disguised instance of homophobia. And then, since when are teachers strangers, especially public school teachers? Are strangers, and of course, McKenna has been very anti-union and anti-teachers union as well. So that post was taken down after it was reported publicly by Publicola.
I got a message for Republicans. Your kids are going to learn lots of things from strangers, whether you want them to or not.
All right. Moving on to national and a class action lawsuit settlement.
Yeah, this week a settlement of a major class action lawsuit over Medicare coverage. It'll benefit patients as well as their families. A lawsuit was brought by a few patients, the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, Parkinson's Action Network, Paralyzed Veterans of America, and others, who were suing Medicare over the policy of cutting off benefits to people with chronic conditions that won't improve over time. This is major good news for people who need nursing and physical therapy care for things like Parkinson's, MS, Alzheimer's, strokes, spinal cord injuries, traumatic brain injuries, and autoimmune disorders like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, the things that don't improve over time, but they're folks who need long-term care and need care that allows them to their diseases not to progress quite so quickly and not to make them completely disabled and completely dependent on their families who have long borne the burden for taking care of these patients both financially and physically. So this is very good news for them. And it's been talked about in the media as a will this cost Medicare and the taxpayers a lot more money? Well, maybe, but also maybe not, because physical therapy and home health care may in the long term be much cheaper than very expensive hospital stays and nursing home care. We just don't know if it will cost Medicare and taxpayers more until we try it. But we do know one thing. We know it is much, much more humane for both the patients and their families.
Yeah, God forbid that quality of life actually be a factor in public policy.
Yeah.
All right. Boy Scouts of America.
Yeah, we won't have time to get into this as much as I would like this week, but last week, release of old files showed for over 50 years the Boy Scouts of America systematically covered up numerous instances of pedophilia amongst their troop leaders and administrators. This is something that is really of the kind of a scale and also culturally of the same kind of import as the Catholic sex abuse scandals, particularly since the Boy Scouts have been really one of the most visibly and vociferously homophobic institutions remaining in American society. So apparently it's okay to have sex with other males after all, so long as you're in a position of power and they're well under the age of consent.
All right. And the disposition matrix, what is that?
Yeah, there was a great story Wednesday. Again, we don't have a lot of time, so I encourage people to go find it in the Washington Post. It's an extensive story on efforts by the Obama administration to make permanent the expansive powers first pioneered under the Bush administration and the imperial presidency and the executive branch and so forth. So they've been using that to kill by drone anywhere, using target lists drawn up in secret, and they now have a code word similar to how we got collateral damage 20 years ago. The disposition matrix is something that they're calling the set of criteria they use to determine when and how people are going to either live or die. Now, mind you, this is done with no court proceedings, is done with no transparency or even public awareness. The people being targeted have no chance to defend themselves.
By aerial drones, right?
Yes, by aerial drones. And even the United States citizens are vulnerable to this. And the administration is actually made the argument that as long as there is a process, and that's what this disposition matrix is being made public for, as long as there is a process, it meets the constitutional requirement of due process. So this, again, is the danger of having even a president that you reflexively like and trust, whether you're on the right or left, establish a precedent like this. It's because the next guy that comes along that you might not like as much then embraces it, and then it becomes a bipartisan permanent consensus, and it's very, very hard to get rid of. And that's exactly what is happening right now with the Obama administration.
All right. Well, speaking of the next guy, we had our final debate this week.
Yeah. Four debates, no questions and no answers mentioning climate change at all, even though it is the biggest domestic issue, the biggest economic issue, the biggest foreign policy issue, and the biggest national security issue facing the country. And so now we have quite possibly the biggest storm in the history of East Coast meteorology bearing down as the planetary revenge for...
You can see that as irony. If you
yes, you can see that as irony, or you can see it as Mother Nature batting last, always.
All right. And some outspoken Republicans this week?
Richard Murdoch, the Republican Senate candidate from Indiana, and a guy named Mandel from Ohio, who's also their Senate candidate there. Murdoch saying in a debate on Monday that essentially rape is God's plan. Quote, "I struggled with it myself for a long time, but I came to realize that life is a gift from God, and I think even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that it's something God intended to happen." Of course, you can make that argument for any violent crime. It's always amazing in these discussions by Republicans, and there's at least six or seven different kinds of distinctions now of what kind of rape is okay.
And once again, I want to know.
It's amazing how the women completely disappear from this equation.
Yeah, I want to know who this God guy is, and if we can pin him down and really get a sense of what he thinks better than just what these weirdo Republican candidates say he thinks.
Almost all of whom are men. Funny that.
Funny that, yeah.
Yeah, I love that Murdoch talked about struggling with himself for a long time. I don't think Murdoch has ever struggled with it the way many women have to struggle with
yes,
it.
Yes, exactly.
Events.
Monday evening this coming, Bishop Gene Robinson, who was the first openly gay bishop in all of organized Christianity, will be in town. He'll be at Town Hall, $5. That's at 7:30 Monday night. And that, of course, in front of the effort to pass R-74. And then Thursday, November 1st, from 7 to 9 p.m., David Dunkey will be talking about the cultural politics in the election 2012. That'll be the Common Good Cafe, the United Temple, United Methodist Church at 43rd and 15th Northeast in the district. And again, that from 7 to 9 o'clock on Thursday.
Talking as we do every week with Joff Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both with Eat the State. Where do people find Eat the State?
Hey, a rare collector's edition of the print Eat the State is available now where you find, if you still can find, print publications of any kind. And then it's also, all the endorsements are also available online at www.eatthestate.org.